Live from the historic parsonage of 19th century gospel minister George Norcross in downtown Carlisle, Pennsylvania. It's Iron Sharpens Iron, a radio platform on which pastors, Christian scholars, and theologians address the burning issues facing the church and the world today. Proverbs 27, verse 17 tells us, iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. Matthew Henry said that in this passage, quote, we are cautioned to take heed whom we converse with and directed to have in view in conversation to make one another wiser and better. It is our hope that this goal will be accomplished over the next hour, and we hope to hear from you, the listener, with your own questions. Now here's our host, Chris Arnton.
Good afternoon, Cumberland County, Pennsylvania, and the rest of humanity who are living on the planet Earth, who are listening via live streaming. This is Chris Arnson, your host of Iron Sharpens Iron, wishing you all a happy Tuesday on this very first day of March 2016. And I think that we have a very important topic that we're discussing today, especially in light of a presidential election that is dominating the airwaves every single day. We are talking about When Sodom Comes Home, the breathtaking insanity of pro-homosexual totalitarian government. And to discuss that with us today for the very first time on Iron Sharpens Iron is Sean Ryan, who is Director of Community Relations for Mass Resistance. And it's my honor and privilege to welcome you to Iron Sharpens Iron for the first time, Sean Ryan.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And in studio with me, co-hosting again on Iron Sharpens Iron, is my friend, the Reverend Buzz Taylor, making a lot of noise as normal. And if you could introduce yourself to our guest, Sean Ryan.
Well, hello. It's good to have you on the show.
Hi. Good to talk to you, Buzz.
Well, before we even get into the subject, When Sodom Comes Home, the breathtaking insanity of pro-homosexual totalitarian government, tell us something about the organization you represent as Director of Community Relations, Mass Resistance.
So Mass Resistance, we're based out of Massachusetts, obviously, and we fight for the protection of children, traditional values, and religion in society against the attacks from the homosexual activists and everything else that is going on out there in the world today. And we've been active for almost 20 years now, and we've been pushing forth legislation and stopping bad legislation and really just trying to fight the culture war on all fronts as best we can.
Yes, and I have been on your email list for as long as I think that you've been sending out emails as an organization, and it is just absolutely amazing some of the things that the leftists in places of power, especially in the more liberal states like Massachusetts, the insane things that they are getting away with and the frightening things that they are getting away with as they take such a strong foothold in this country. That is why it is no exaggeration when I titled this program The Breathtaking Insanity of Pro-Homosexual Totalitarian Government. And I know that I will be trying to repeat this throughout the program at least several times, but the website for Mass Resistance is massresistance.org, massresistance.org. And Sean, there are a number of things that I know you'd like to bring up today that you would like to inform our listeners about, and if they already know about these occurrences or footholds that the left is gaining, perhaps giving them an update on these things. Tell us something about first of all, Dr. Church. Give us an update on Dr. Church and exactly the background of that story.
So Dr. Paul Church is a physician at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston, and he was fired essentially for speaking out against homosexual behavior on a medical basis earlier this year. So they moved to expel him. They went through a round of appeal hearings, and now they have finally terminated him. And there are ongoing developments for that at the moment. It's not an open and shut case. But for some background, he was essentially expelled after receiving, this started 10 years ago, he was receiving, you know, many emails periodically about their homosexual events. They began several years ago to have these pro-homosexual events at the hospital, pro-homosexual speakers, these different activist groups, so on and so forth. If you go on to the current version of the Beth Israel Deaconess website, BIDMC.org, they still have a stamp of approval from the Human Rights Campaign, which is the leading homosexual lobbyist in Washington, about being an approved HRC, you know, healthcare facility, which is just really just terrible when you think about the national influence that's coming in on that. So about 10 years ago, he started receiving all these emails, and he started speaking out. He's saying, as a healthcare institution, we can't endorse these things. This is in light of the fact that the hospital was marching in the homosexual pride parades that they have every year in downtown Boston, which are these really terrible, obscene events. I mean, any of your listeners who fortunately haven't seen them or understand this sort of thing, they're just these terribly exhibitionist, obscene events, and it's all pushing for this hardcore sexualized mentality, very unsafe sexual practices, all those sorts of things. The whole hook, line, and sinker of the sexual liberation movement, so to speak. And the Beth Israel Deaconess Hospital was involved with these things, or had started to at that time. And Dr. Church started speaking out and talking to people involved with these things, you know, emailing different people who were involved and in charge of these outreach or so-called efforts to the homosexuals, and saying that, well, we can't endorse this as a hospital from a medical health standpoint. Just all of the disease and risk factors that is endemic into the lifestyle of most homosexuals, saying we can't support this as a hospital. So eventually, his messages made its way to the wrong people in the administration, and they essentially started launching harassment claims at him. One of the people involved happened to be homosexual, and since he felt offended, that was enough grounds in his own mind for harassment, essentially. Even though that was not the case, Dr. Church is a long-time physician, a very wonderful, respectful guy. Anytime he speaks on any topic, anytime I've heard him speak, and he's been speaking out more and more recently in the public sphere, very respectful guy, and I've read some of the communications involved, but this ended up being grounds, or the hospital turned it into grounds for some kind of harassment claim against him. So in that instance, he was given a gag order, so to speak. You know, you can't talk about these topics, you can't post on the internal hospital messaging system, so on and so forth about this topic at all whatsoever. And he conditionally agreed, stating that if you stop sending me these things, I don't want to hear about them. You know, if you don't want to hear from me, I can do it on my own time. I don't want to hear about these things from the hospital. So he said, conditionally, if you take me off your email list for these things, I will stop speaking out. Until that time, you know, I'll keep talking about it. And eventually he did. He continued to bring up some of these issues again in a very respectful manner, and the hospital moved to dismiss him under violations of the gag order. They did try to charge him under specific hospital policy about internal communications and digital communications, but really it wasn't a part of that. It was essentially for breaking this gag order that they put on him. So this case is so horrible here. You have a a doctor, a urologist, who specializes in these sorts of things, who dealt with aspects of the AIDS crisis and whatnot, obviously, saw all these things, dealt with all these things in patients, has a number of his own homosexual patients, and saying, look, this, you can't do this. This, you are harming people. That is really, obviously, the opposite of the whole Hippocratic mindset, the Hippocratic oath. You should not do harm when you are not telling people the full truth, when you are collaborating in this dangerous lifestyle, you are doing people harm. And he was fired for that. He was essentially dismissed for trying to be a doctor, really, essentially, is how this goes. And not only that, but a number of his other affiliations are also being threatened. He has affiliations with a few hospitals in the area. So they are also being threatened as a result of this as well. So essentially, he's essentially being blacklisted now from the area, or they're attempting to, all for speaking out on this issue in a gentle and courageous manner. Now, you know, the one of the aspects of this being that he never spoke against patients. There were no patients complaints. He's been practicing for years. He's admitted that, yes, obviously he's had homosexual patients and whatnot, but it's never been an issue in that regard. It is not, you know, their so-called discrimination or whatever else they could launch at him. It was professional dialogue between colleagues, and they essentially wanted to silence him because he wasn't going along in their system. He wasn't letting this happen. He wasn't going to be silently corroborating in this. And so they've essentially tried to chase him out of the organization and blacklist him. And it's just a really terrible case when you think that an objective organization, an organization that is meant to promote the health and well-being of people, is trying to get rid of someone who is doing exactly that, who is doing his best to put the reins on this whole, as you termed it, this whole totalitarian homosexual movement. And it's just been a very awful case. We've had protests and things outside the hospital. We distributed information in the summer after the story emerged. And it's just a really horrible issue. And many of the people we talked to at these protests were very concerned for the doctor, especially these were patients largely we were talking to, and nurses as well, who were concerned about their own job, nurses and doctors who would have to, again, deliver people bad news or advice that maybe isn't politically correct, people who were fearing for their own jobs as a result of this, patients who were fearing for their health, medical students. Dr. Church is affiliated with the medical school, as an adjunct professor. Medical students we spoke to, very, you know, young folks who you would think, you know, hey, maybe they might go for the homosexual political line, you know, fall victim to that, that whole package. But no, some of these very thoughtful students, who were concerned, you know, about objective medical truth. I mean, people who are studying this, who are devoting, who are starting to devote their lives to this, they now see that threatened by this case. So it is a very terrible case. It's very difficult to deal with, but there is progress moving on these things. There are development, and we still have to wait and see where this is going to go. Dr. Church is still working, thankfully, very much, and he's really taken this all in stride, and I think it shows the character of the man very deeply. He is really genuinely one of the kindest, most content people I've met. He's handling this very well, and, you know, he's come into this with the approach, you know, if he has to sacrifice something big to tell the truth, that's exactly what he's going to do.
Wow.
Well, you have this, as I already repeated a couple of times, this sheer insanity where a doctor, a physician, is being fired because he is more concerned about the lives of individuals than he is over hurting their feelings. Mm-hmm. This is basically a scenario where it's becoming illegal to save someone's life if you hurt their feelings. And, of course, this is only in regard, it seems, to homosexuals.
Right, yes.
You're not going to see a doctor being fired for telling an overweight patient that his weight is threatening his life. You're not going to have a doctor fired for any other thing he may warn his patient about that is life-threatening, unless it is his homosexuality.
Right.
It is absolutely madness. It is absolute madness. And so what is Dr. Church doing today?
What is Dr. Church doing today? Well, he's still practicing urology, thankfully, at another one of his affiliations, and he's also joined a group, American Association of Physicians, to speak out against these things on an institutional basis as well. He's joined a group of doctors that's a professional organization that fights for medical sanity in these sorts of things, that fights against the just completely dangerous, irrational ideologies put forth by the homosexual communities, the transgender advocates. So he's come out swinging on this, and he's, like I said before, he's a very strong guy, and he's really trying to make his mark on the world and really just stop the onslaught of all of this terrible stuff going on, because, you know, it was a top-down phenomenon. I mean, this sort of thing is coming in from outside groups not affiliated with the hospital, you know, threatening to say, oh, you have to do this, you have to do that. I mean, it is a complete top-down organization. I mean, there is serious money involved, serious pressure involved on institutions and organizations, and it's coming in from all sides. So he's working in his capacity, in addition to his daily responsibilities as a doctor, he is doing the best he can in his capacity to really fight against all of these terrible things.
Now, this is not unique to Massachusetts, I presume. But, I mean, are you saying the situation tends to be worse in Massachusetts, though?
Absolutely. One of the things that I always tell people when I talk to them about these issues, one of the things I always say is that if you're seeing it in Massachusetts, you know, Massachusetts is sort of the forerunner or the canary in the coal mine with regards to, really, I mean, that's really the only way I can say, with regards to all of these issues. So if you're seeing it in Massachusetts, you are probably going to start seeing some version of it wherever you live. You know, farther down the East Coast, Texas, California, anywhere, Pennsylvania, anywhere, you will start seeing some form of this, I guarantee it. And now, you know, with national homosexual marriage being imposed by the Supreme Court, I mean, that was really a lot of, that was part of the instigation of a number of these issues in Massachusetts, and I am very much convinced that it's going to be seen elsewhere increasingly, and increasingly we are seeing it elsewhere. I mean, you have to think, for instance, the organization I mentioned before, the Human Rights Campaign, and I keep having to explain it because it's not really particularly about human rights. I mean, it's a homosexual political pressure group. I mean, that is homosexual transgender political pressure group. That is all that is. And they are publicly, you know, putting forth a campaign to work on the southern states. I mean, states that are traditionally more religious, more conservative. I mean, they are pouring serious money and people into those states to transform that system. I believe the campaign is, it's called Campaign One or something like that. I can't recall the name specifically. I apologize. But they, and they, it's not particularly secret by any means, but people have to know that they will not only see it, these sorts of things in their area, but they will be targeted if there is pockets of resistance. And that's what you're seeing in the southeastern states right now with the human rights campaign, is that they will come in and target states and communities and any other areas of resistance. And that's really what it comes down to. And they will find ways to target churches as well. They will absolutely find legal ways. I mean, there's already a history of this stuff in a number of states. I mean, that is really the game plan, is to radically transform society. Mm-hmm. And just briefly wrapping up that point, I was thinking about this recently. The whole idea of what they term, you know, progressivism, quote unquote, so to speak, I prefer to call it, you know, regression. You know, their idea of progress is absolutely not mine. But that whole idea, it's not about attaining a goal. These folks are always in motion to push something, to change something, to keep everything revolving and changing, to destroy traditional values and things like that. There is no one particular specific goal or endpoint. It is just constantly in motion, and that's what people have to realize, is that even with the Supreme Court issue and everything else earlier this year, I mean, it's not over. It's not going to stop. These people are not going to go quietly away. They've already started publicly doing their hand-wringing over pushing for different bills, and on a federal level and state levels, and that how much money they need to do this. And they always have this in mind to keep pushing these things forward for them.
Yeah, this is it's just revolting, and it's just like the psychiatric movement. You know, Freudian psychology and Jungian psychology and psychiatry have never been a fan of biblical Christianity, but psychiatrists and psychologists until the 70s were practically in lockstep in believing that, or in teaching that, homosexual behavior was a disorder.
Right.
And even if Christians themselves prefer to call it like it is, sin and damnable wickedness, they at least recognize that it was a abnormal behavior, and it was like practically overnight, without even exaggerating, that all of those critiques or assessments or labeling of homosexuality as anything detrimental or abnormal or wrong or anything to do with psychiatric impairment, mental disorder, all of that was removed from the psychiatric textbooks, and you could very easily lose a medical practice as a psychiatrist or a counseling practice as a psychologist for...
Absolutely.
For telling a patient that his homosexuality is abnormal and dangerous.
And I think that brings up an interesting point as well. You think about the practice of psychology and those sorts of things, and by a lot of people's standards, those could be considered, you know, putting forth certain normative arguments, things you can argue about or debate. I mean, that's the whole process, you know, they call, you know, psychoanalyze. Well, we have to figure these things out, or, you know, there's many different directions people can take. So you think about it, that's sort of a very relative concept. What's evolved here now is that now we have people going after some very, very startling objective truths. So that's where it's moved from. It's moved from the more subjective types of fights, which I would put psychology into, and no personal feelings. I sort of have a fundamentally dim view of psychology practice. But so moving from these sort of subjective battlegrounds...
By the way, you're not alone in that objection.
to objective things, you know, the Dr. Church case being one of them, the whole notion of gender being another, a concept that I've always sort of seen this battle play out, that I kind of realized more or less recently. You think about the biblical notion, you know, the way, the truth, the life, so to speak. And just as a quick disclaimer, Mass Resistance isn't affiliated with any religious groups.
Mm-hmm.
We have actually several different religions working in this office. But you think about the biblical concept, the whole, you know, the way, the truth, and the life. When you think about what I term the sexual anarchist movement, when you think about where they go and what they attack, that is really what they're after. They've already viciously gone after life. I mean, we can see that obviously in the abortion in the abortion issue. We've seen them go after the way, the Christian way of living, saying, oh, this isn't reasonable, people don't really do this, people really don't conduct themselves like that, that's impossible to ask someone to live their life that like that, people don't do that, people have never done that, this is impossible. They go after the way of life, and now the final and possibly the most difficult plank for them is to go after objective truth. So when you think about where that whole movement goes, it attacks those three pillars that are talked about in the Bible, and it's really disturbing when you think about it through that context, but it makes everything a lot clearer when you see where they're going, what they're doing. So the way, the truth, and the life, those are the three foundations that they really assault, and that the truth is going to be the biggest one of this, the medical issues with homosexuality, the idea that, yes, people are actually born with an anatomical sex, you know, the whole transgender, you know, thing that's going on. I mean, that's what they're going off after now, the last part, just plainly objective truth.
Yeah, I just heard a new description when I was watching the Academy Awards. Some of my more conservative Christian friends may disown me just for watching the Academy Awards. But a new way, and maybe it's not new, I just hadn't heard it before, but a different way than I have heard of describing a sex change operation. One of the women announcing a film that was based on, I believe, one of the first sex change operations in history.
Right.
She called it gender confirmation surgery.
Oh yes, yeah, I am familiar with that phrase. Yeah, gender confirmation. That's absolutely disturbing. There was something I the other day about Chastity Bono, the daughter of
Cher.
Of Cher, the popular singer, saying that, oh well, I wasn't, you know, a girl all those years or this or that, and everyone else is scratching their heads going, wait, what? You know, going after that. No, they're, yeah, and again, it's the sort of cult of feelings. I mean, you know, harkening back to the Dr. Church thing, I mean, there was no harassment. Someone simply felt offended, which is different than being harassed. So again, it all revolves around the personal feeling, and there's no limit to this insanity. I was at an event in the Massachusetts State House the other day for the Commission of Gay and Lesbian Youth, they call it, and these poor young adults, these two girls who came up to speak, they're talking briefly about their whole identity, this and that, and it's unimaginably complex. Like, they list several things under that. It's like, I'm transgender, I'm this, I'm that, and it's like they have to sort of lay out this whole schema before they even start, you know, talking about the speech. They have to say, oh, well, if you're familiar with this, they have to say, oh, well, these are my preferred pronouns, you know, because we don't like to refer to people as he or she anymore, apparently. At least not if you're hanging around the Mass State House, apparently. And they lay out this whole complicated thing. You know, it's you almost wonder how much time they have left for an actual speech. And it's, you think about how terribly disordered and how bizarre it must be to be in that mindset. This idea that we are not created, so to speak, in a certain way. We just create ourselves, and it's just based off of these terrible untruths. You know, the whole idea that you can change your gender, the whole idea that you're quote unquote born that way in terms of homosexuality, which that whole mindset I always refer to, homosexuality versus transgenderism, I always refer to as you're born that way except when you're not, except when they try to change their genders, then they say they're not born that way.
That's a good point.
You know, you're born that way, well, I mean, you know, except when you're not, of course. And that's, I mean, how do you, I've studied this stuff for years, and it still perplexes me even to this day how you even go about trying to live a life in this sort of disturbing mindset. And that's really what it is. You talk about the whole idea of transgenderism now that's coming up. Not that's coming up, that's really been starting to saturate the media lately, although it's been in progress for years. This whole idea of transgenderism, which, going back to the psychologist, is called gender dysphoria. Now, you think about the word dysphoria, which the prefix on that, D-Y-S, you know, is akin to dystopia, dysfunction,
mm-hmm.
You know, very negative things. So you think about that dysphoria, being uncomfortable with some sort of aspect. Now, normally when you talk about dysphorias, being uncomfortable with something that's fairly normal or something you can't change, well, you don't, it's not your responsibility to change. It's your responsibility to deal with these issues in a healthy way. I'll give you an example.
In fact, could you pick up right where you left off when we returned from the commercial break?
Absolutely, will do.
Okay, and just don't forget we were talking about gender dysphoria and how people who are suffering from that are to overcome those things, not actually mutilate their bodies. But if you would like to join us on the air with a question for our guest, Sean Ryan, and if you tuned in late, Sean Ryan is the Director of Communications for Mass Resistance, and previously Sean was a volunteer with Americans for Truth about homosexuality in Naperville, Illinois, and has been involved in the pro-family movement since 2011. If you have a question for Sean, our email address is chrisarnzen@gmail.com, chrisarnzen@gmail.com. And please, if you send in a question, give us at least your first name, city and state, and country of residence if you're outside of the U.S. And please only remain anonymous if it's about a personal and private matter. And obviously, with a topic like this, there may very well be many of you who do not want to identify yourselves if your question relates to something that is going on in your own home or wherever, your own church, and you don't want to identify yourself. That's chrisarnzen@gmail.com, chrisarnzen@gmail.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back with Sean Ryan of Mass Resistance.
Paul wrote to the church at Galatia, "For am I now seeking the approval of man or of God? Or am I trying to please man? If I were still trying to please man, I would not be a servant of Christ." Hi, I'm Mark Lukens, pastor of Providence Baptist Church. We are a Reformed Baptist church, and we hold to the London Baptist Confession of Faith of 1689. We are in Norfolk, Massachusetts. We strive to reflect Paul's mindset to be much more concerned with how God views what we say and what we do than how men view these things. That's not the best recipe for popularity, but since that wasn't the apostles' priority, it must not be ours either. We believe, by God's grace, that we are called to demonstrate love and compassion to our fellow man, and to be vessels of Christ's mercy to a lost and hurting community around us, and to build up the body of Christ in truth and love. If you live near Norfolk, Massachusetts, or plan to visit our area, please come and join us for worship and fellowship. You can call us at 508 508-5750. That's 508-5750. Or go to our website to email us, listen to past sermons, worship songs, or watch our TV program entitled Resting in Grace. You can find us at ProvidenceBaptistChurchMA.org. That's ProvidenceBaptistChurchMA.org. Or even on sermonaudio.com. Providence Baptist Church is delighted to sponsor Iron Sharpens Iron Radio.
Charles Haddon Spurgeon once said,
"Give yourself unto reading. The man who never reads will never be read. He who never quotes will never be quoted. He who will not use the thoughts of other men's brains proves that he has no brains of his own. You need to read."
Solid Ground Christian Books is a publisher and book distributor who takes these words of the Prince of Preachers to heart. The mission of Solid Ground Christian Books is to bring back treasures of the past to minister to Christians in the present and future, and to publish new titles that address burning issues in the church and the world. Since its beginning in 2001, Solid Ground has been committed to publish God-centered, Christ-exalting books for all ages. We invite you to go treasure hunting at solid-ground-books.com. That's solid-ground-books.com and see what priceless literary gems from the past or present you can unearth from Solid Ground. Solid Ground Christian Books is honored to be a weekly sponsor of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio.
Thrivent Financial is not your typical financial services provider. As a membership organization, we help Christians be wise with money and live generously every day. And for the fourth year in a row, we were named one of the world's most ethical companies by the Ethisphere Institute, a leading international think tank dedicated to the creation, advancement, and sharing of best practices in business ethics. Contact me, Mike Gallagher, financial consultant, at 717-254-6433. Again, 717-254-6433 to learn more about the Thrivent Difference.
Finances and generosity. That's the Thrivent story.
We were made to thrive.
Welcome back. This is Chris Arnzen. If you just tuned us in, our guest today is Sean Ryan, Director of Community Relations for Mass Resistance. And their website is massresistance.org. Massresistance.org. You're going to want to pass on that website, especially to everyone that you know and love in Massachusetts. And today we are talking about When Sodom Comes Home, the breathtaking insanity of pro-homosexual totalitarian government. And as Sean had described it earlier, Massachusetts, the state where he resides and which is the home of the organization Mass Resistance, since the play on words there, Massachusetts is like the canary in the coal mine, and the rest of the country can see what is heading our way when it comes to the stronghold of the homosexual activist movement, and it is certainly frightening. If you have a question that you'd like to ask Sean about this, you can email us at chrisarnzen@gmail.com. And before the break, Sean, you were talking about gender dysphoria.
Right, right. So I was speaking before about this attack on objective truth going along with these other attacks on the foundations of Christianity and so forth. Now, when you think about the whole transgender idea, what's termed by psychologists as gender dysphoria, the whole idea of a dysphoria, dysfunction, dystopia, something that's not right. So gender dysphoria being uncomfortable with your anatomical sense, sex. Now, normally, when you have any sort of other dysphoria or termed dysphoria within psychology, the emphasis really is to cope with whatever the patient has going on in their life. So, for instance, eating disorders, things like anorexia and so forth, are also similarly body dysphorias. Mm-hmm. But we don't tell people to continue to diet, to continue to destroy themselves, to do that. I mean, that's bizarre and unmerciful. So to tell these folks who are dealing with these unfortunate things to completely flip the paradigm and say, actually, yes, you should change, you can change, and we can help you do it. That is cruel and bizarre. And it doesn't even adhere to the own logic within, or the implied, or whatever remaining logic in the psychological community. It doesn't even adhere to that. And that's really what these folks who focus on, you know, as you humorously remarked before, what they call these gender confirmation surgeries or these gender transitions. I mean, that is what it is. I mean, you are collaborating in someone mutilating their body or harming themselves in other ways. I mean, a lot of these hormone drugs and things, taking those things, folks who take those things, there is cancer risk and other medical risk from, again, you know, being disordered or striving for disorder. There's always a risk in that anytime you go against really what the natural order of things are and should be. And it's just very cruel on their part, and it's very depressing to watch. And you think about it, and that's the only place where that logic applies in psychology. And it's just terrible to watch, and it's again going against the grain of truth. What is objective truth?
Yes, and it has reached the insanity where you know, there are some people who have disorders, mental disorders, where they look upon their limbs, their own arms and legs, as foreign appendages to their body, and they will not be satisfied until those limbs are removed. And there are people who have bizarre mental disorders where they desire to be blind and physically blind and that kind of a thing. And there have been doctors who are giving in to that insanity. It just is absolutely amazing what the medical field and the psychiatric field is willing to do just to help cheer people up, even if what they believe is going to cheer them up is absolutely insane, grotesque, barbaric, and involves self-mutilation, mutilation, I should say, if somebody else is performing the surgery. But absolutely insane. We do have a listener in Sharpsburg, Georgia, Lou. He has a comment, and I'm going to tack a question onto it of my own. His comment is, the New York Mets announced their first LGBT night at Shea Stadium. Well, actually, it's not Shea Stadium, Lou, it's City Field now. This upcoming year. Now, my question for you is, anything going on like that with the Red Sox or the Patriots?
Oh, you know.
Or the Bruins or the Celtics or anybody else over there.
They have done things at Fenway Park, but it's even interesting. It's actually quite an interesting moment that you mentioned this in about the sports teams. One of the legislative issues that's going on right now, and maybe we can move into it and talk about it more detailed in a minute, but one of the legislative details that's going on right now is what they call transgender accommodations, quote-unquote, letting cross-dressing men use women's bathrooms. Now, recently, I believe it was only a week and a half. Well, no, it was a little bit farther back than that. But fairly recently, all of the Boston, New England sports teams came out in support of this bill. They were, you know, they consulted with the lead transgender lobbyist, and they all put out this media blitz and this press release on this thing. Because one of the issues, in addition to, you know, restrooms and things like that, you know, were locker rooms and shower rooms and facilities and so on and so forth. And these folks on these teams came out and said, oh yeah, absolutely, no, we're totally in favor of that. Now, you think about professional sports teams, and you really sincerely doubt that anyone dealing with their gender dysphoria and whatnot is even going to remotely have a chance of going into or being involved in a professional sports team. So it wouldn't even apply to them. But again, it's a top-down thing. So now you have these sports figures who are, you know, otherwise, you know, decent enough guys and respected and admired by a lot of people and a lot of young people, and going out and saying, oh yeah, well, you should totally support this. Why aren't you, in fact? And, you know, it creates this whole illusion of some sort of rational majority. That's really one part of it. Now, we talked about homosexual and transgender activists going after all of these different things in societies. I mean, that's just one of them, the cultural aspect. And within the cultural aspect, sports being a part of that, they're trying to push further and further into that. So now you have all of these guys saying, oh yeah, absolutely, you should support that, and they're trying to isolate and alienate people who think differently, and, you know, people who would suddenly think, oh well, maybe we should think twice about speaking out against this. You know, everyone seems to be in support of it, which is absolutely not the case at all whatsoever. But that's I mean, yeah, that's was one big thing fairly recently. I have to, I don't know for certain, but I'm sure a lot of the teams have been involved with LGBT events and other things and whatnot. I know for a fact Fenway Park up here has had, you know, a homosexual night and so on and so forth. And it's just really to that's really one of the relentless pushes, is to just get into every single part of society. And that includes religion, and that includes whatever religion anyone is practicing.
And especially places where there are going to be lots of children, like a sports arena, a baseball stadium, et cetera.
Yeah, absolutely. So part of their thing is just to push into every aspect of society, you know, culture, sports, everything. Things that have absolutely nothing to do with human sexuality. They're just going to walk into and try and score some sort of publicity or some sort of philosophical point over. And they are going after churches and other religious groups and everything else, and they are actively trying to infiltrate and influence them. They've done this in a lot of places, and they will continue to do so because they have to insert themselves everywhere, even places where they know they probably wouldn't really be accepted or wanted. They have to move into that's part of this strategy, is to get into every facet of American life. For instance, one example up here that we fought over fairly recently, the St. Patrick's parade in Boston, which is obviously, for obvious reasons, you know, a Catholic connotation or a religious connotation.
Yeah, the Hibernians, right? The ancient one over Hibernians, don't they run that, or was that just New York that they run that?
I'm not sure on the order.
Well, it's a very Roman Catholic group, whatever.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, if you're doing an Irish saint event in Boston, yeah, it's definitely very much a Catholic thing. And they recently started allowing homosexual groups to march in the St. Patrick's Day parade. And you have to wonder, okay, what does this even, and, well, it's the, I believe they've been doing the same thing in New York now, or just recently within the last year or two. And you have to wonder, okay, what does this have to do with St. Patrick? What does
it has nothing to do with St. Patrick.
With the Catholic Church or the church at large. What is the point of that? And if there's anybody of a Catholic persuasion listening, I mean, you think about it, this smalls, the date falls in the middle of, you know, Lent, which is a a period of repentance. So you're literally doing the opposite of what you should be at that given time. I mean, it's bizarre, but that's yes. one of those things that they've inserted themselves into, and a lot of groups mm-hmm. dropped out of the parade over that, and we certainly don't think it's going to be the end of this. I mean, we think that it's probably going to continue to wither in Boston and New York because of these mm-hmm. things, because it's just a complete non sequitur. That's what I'm saying. There's no logic to it. There's no logic in their lifestyle, obviously, mm-hmm. considering all of the unfortunate aspects in death and disease. I mean, there's no logic to any of it. I mean, it's this sort of nihilistic street where we're not only bent on destruction, but we're bent on widespread destruction.
Yeah, it's just as let's see how far a group of Christians who had repented of and abandoned the homosexual lifestyle. Let's see how far they would getting permission to march in the gay rights parade, for instance.
Oh, right.
No, if they have some kind of involvement with that community and they believe themselves to be a persecuted minority by the homosexual activists, you know, why shouldn't they have some kind of a right to march if they so wanted to? I mean, I doubt that they would. But it's just to point out the absurdity of it. You know, right. if they would never allow such a group to march with them, why would a group running a parade that is predominantly run by Roman Catholics, and that is an antithetical behavior to what they teach and believe? It's just absolutely absurd. And Buzz, you had a question.
Well, yes, I was wondering if there's any news of good news from the resistance, any success stories?
Oh, absolutely. For right now, at least up in here in Boston, so we're sort of in the middle of things legislatively, for sure. Next 2 weeks is going to be kind of a crucible for some of the legislation that really has to make it out of the committee, for the most part, within the next 2 weeks. But we've definitely stopped at least one major bill up here at the moment, which is a bill that would have banned issues for sexual orientation. That would have banned counseling, psychological counseling for people suffering from sexual orientation issues and that sort of thing. Which, as you referred to before, people who are ex-gay and so on and so forth. I think that was great that it sort of ties into what you're mentioning, the folks who have changed, who were able to get help, who are living a different lifestyle, who are living a better lifestyle. They were trying to ban that in Massachusetts. They still are. But after informing a number of the legislators, we have a very strong voice against that bill banning the therapy. Now, they've done this in several other states. I mean, they did this in my home state of New Jersey, out of all places, and obviously in California. And they were trying to attempt to do it here. In fact, they were the proponents of this bill were sort of kind of missed that they were not the first state to do this. Like I said, Massachusetts, or the homosexual activists here, sort of take a certain pride in being the first to do everything with regards to those legislative aspects. So we've put that bill on hold right now. There's no appearance that it will move anywhere or go anywhere. And after relentless lobbying at the State House and talking to state representatives, I mean, we had a lot of support from Democratic representatives over this, who just, they heard all the arguments and they realized that this was a bad bill, that people should be able to choose to go for therapy. And this is therapy for minors, I might add, for teenagers and young adults. And the reason they go after that demographic specifically is, as a lot of people know, sexuality and things like that are all sort of evolving at that time in people's lives. So that is a real way for them to go after kids, which they're already widespread in the schools, to go after children and to essentially get them into their way of thinking and then stop any other options, so therapy or anything else, to completely cut that out and to have these people involved with the homosexual lifestyle permanently, because it is harder to deal with those issues in adulthood, again, just because of the age issue and how those things work. So we have stopped that for now. There are things that are going on with Dr. Church, as I mentioned previously, although we're not totally able to talk about them at the moment, but we think things could be looking up for him, and there is some involvement at actually the federal level. So there are things that are looking up for Dr. Church. But yes, there is definitely progress. I mean, it's always a mixed thing, and one of the things we can always do best is to really inform people and keep them involved. And, you know, we're really working hard on this right now. Mm-hmm. One of the other bills we're working on, as I mentioned, was the transgender accommodations. And there really is a lot of resistance and hesitance on that. I do not know for sure where that will go, but there really is a lot of consternation among the citizens and among quite a few of the legislators as well, who realize this is a problem, and it may possibly be, you know, the straw that breaks the camel's back. This transgender accommodations issue, quote unquote, which they pushed in the last legislative session, they weren't able to get. They've been pushing it before. In fact, it had to be stripped from a previous bill in 2011 because it was so controversial, letting cross-dressing men into women's bathrooms. And there is still a resistance and a hesitance on that, because no matter how many lobbyists they hear from on the other side, no matter what talking points they get involved in, no matter if every single sports team in New England is pro the transgender agenda, it's just a very concrete policy point that in reality most people and most legislators really are just not comfortable with implementing into law. But we will see where that goes, because that is still evolving. But I can say for certain that the transgender lobby has not had quite exactly the motion that they've wanted on this. So yeah, things are looking up. You know, there are things we are defeating. There are things that are sort of in flux. But it's always sort of a changing landscape. In some of the southern areas, if you want to look out nationally, there is definitely growing resistance. There was a story recently about students, you know, silently protesting the homosexual agenda in a California school. There's one school we're involved with in Tennessee right now that's fighting the establishment of a gay-straight alliance. Most of these organizations are pushed by national groups, like the Gay and Lesbian Straight Education Network. It's not normally a grassroots establishment, so we are actually working on fighting that there. A lot of our material has actually been used on the ground in Tennessee right now, from both people we're involved with and even just parents testifying about the terrible things that have gone on in Massachusetts schools with the implementation of these homosexual groups. So yeah, and people are using mass resistance materials, and I know a lot of our stuff is Massachusetts centric, but it really provides a good history of where this stuff is going and what's going to happen if this starts happening in your state. So a lot of people were using that in Tennessee, and I was reading some of the remarks parents were making at these school committee hearings, and a lot of that stuff was from Massachusetts history, which we've exposed and documented over the years in great detail. And, you know, it's good to see people reaching out and getting the information they need and using it to fight back.
We're going to go to a break right now. If you'd like to join us on the air, and we do have a couple of people waiting patiently to have their questions asked and answered on the air, but if you'd like to join them with a question of your own for our guest, Sean Ryan, the Director of Communications for MassResistance.org, email us at chrisarnzen@gmail.com. That's chrisarnzen@gmail.com. And please include your first name, your city and state, and your country of residence. But you may remain anonymous if it makes you feel more comfortable. We'll be right back after these messages, so don't go away.
Paul wrote to the church at Galatia, "For am I now seeking the approval of man or of God? Or am I trying to please man? If I were still trying to please man, I would not be a servant of Christ." Hi, I'm Mark Lukens, pastor of Providence Baptist Church. We are a Reformed Baptist church, and we hold to the London Baptist Confession of Faith of 1689. We are in Norfolk, Massachusetts. We strive to reflect Paul's mindset to be much more concerned with how God views what we say and what we do than how men view these things. That's not the best recipe for popularity, but since that wasn't the apostles' priority, it must not be ours either. We believe, by God's grace, that we are called to demonstrate love and compassion to our fellow man, and to be vessels of Christ's mercy to a lost and hurting community around us, and to build up the body of Christ in truth and love. If you live near Norfolk, Massachusetts, or plan to visit our area, please come and join us for worship and fellowship. You can call us at 508-528-5750, that's 508-528-5750, or go to our website to email us, listen to past sermons, worship songs, or watch our TV program entitled Resting in Grace. You can find us at providencebaptistchurchma.org, that's providencebaptistchurchma.org, or even on sermonaudio.com. Providence Baptist Church is delighted to sponsor Iron Sharpens Iron Radio.
I'm James White of Alpha and Omega Ministries. The New American Standard Bible is perfect for daily reading or in-depth study. Used by pastors, scholars, and everyday readers, the NASB is widely embraced and trusted as a literal and readable Bible translation. The NASB offers clarity and readability while maintaining high accuracy to the original languages, which the NASB is known for. The NASB is available in many editions, like a topical reference Bible. Researched and prepared by biblical scholars devoted to accuracy, the new topical reference Bible includes contemporary topics relevant to today's issues. From compact to giant print Bibles, find an NASB that fits your needs very affordably at nasbible.com. Trust, discover, and enjoy the NASB for yourself today. Go to nasbible.com. That's nasbible.com.
Are you a Christian looking to align your faith and finances? Then you'll want to check out Thrivent Financial. We're not your typical financial services provider. We're a not-for-profit Fortune 500 organization that helps our nearly 2.4 million members be wise with money. We provide guidance that reflects your values so you can protect what matters most. We help members live generously and strengthen the communities where they live, work, and worship. Learn more about the Thrivent story by contacting me, Mike Gallagher, financial consultant, at 717-254-6433. Again, 717-254-6433.
Faith, finances, and generosity. That's the Thrivent story.
We were made to thrive.
Welcome back. This is Chris Arnzen of Iron Sharpens Iron. If you've tuned in late, our guest today for the entire 2 hours is Sean Ryan, Director of Communications for MassResistance.org. MassResistance.org. In studio with me is my co-host, Reverend Buzz Taylor. We are discussing When Sodom Comes Home, the breathtaking insanity of pro-homosexual totalitarian government. And if you'd like to join us on the air, our email address is chrisarnzen@gmail.com. chrisarnzen@gmail.com. And before I go on to address some of the questions of a couple of our listeners, I want you to continue a little bit with this absolutely insane laws giving freedom for cross-dressing men to enter into what were otherwise known as ladies' rooms. when you think, you know, the thing that's mind-boggling about this is that the leftist movement is largely fueled by feminists. And I cannot imagine how on earth, just shows you how Satan leaves human beings to absolutely insane behavior. But I can't imagine why feminists would be happy about perv men wanting to gain access to a ladies' room, so they just put on a dress. And, you know, those in the feminist movement have long described men, maybe sometimes men in general, but many men at least, as nothing but misogynist, perverted individuals who demean and demoralize women, who demean and demoralize women and use them as sexual objects and all that kind of thing. And yet, how could this leftist agenda fueled by feminists want to gain access and give more opportunity for these perverted men to just go into bathrooms and leer at women and perhaps rape them?
Right, absolutely. And I think it goes back sort of what we were saying before, just the complete lack of a real sense of logic and truth. Because when you have people who are really unmoored from that bearing, a reference of truth, I mean, there is no limit to what you can do when you're just jumping through all of these ideological hoops and running around in a circle. And it's good that you mentioned that point. We released a report recently about all of the issues throughout the years before transgender laws started coming into legislators, and on the books, all of the issues in previous years across this country and a few abroad about men dressing up as women, going into women's restrooms to assault women and girls. And a lot of these men were people who, quote-unquote, identified as transgender, and a lot of them also just used it as a ruse to gain access. Now imagine if you made that legal. You can walk in, presenting yourself as a woman, gaining access. Now imagine if that was legal, and they're working on that in a number of states in addition to Massachusetts. Imagine if that is legal. I mean, can you imagine just the explosion in these cases that would start to happen? I mean, it is absolutely insane. And one of the major cases in Toronto, a homeless man who was a cross-dresser for years was living at a women's shelter and assaulted two women in 2012. And this was, you know, after he was given access to these accommodations by law. And it's, you have to think about the insanity that's behind this whole idea. I mean, people are going to use it exactly for that. Now, even more wildly, at least for Massachusetts law, and I don't want to generalize too much, but in general, probably around the country as well, in the Massachusetts law, as gender identity stands, you know, you or me could just walk into a woman's restroom and claim the power of the law. You don't actually have to be really presenting in any sort of way, because if gender is relative, if it can be whatever we want, then we can do whatever right. we want. You know, all you have to say is, well, you know, maybe not all women dress that way, not all women wear makeup.
Well, I could walk in there and say that I am, in my true identity, a female cross-dresser.
Yeah, right.
You wear men's clothes, right?
Right, exactly, yeah. Yeah, yeah, you can say that. Well, yeah. I've absolutely.
Don't want to give anybody ideas here. I'm just pointing out the ludicrousness.
Right. And there was, and as we speak about this, there was a case in Seattle roughly a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, right after they had their gender non-discrimination law, quote-unquote, as they call it, for this transgender stuff in the bathrooms and locker rooms. A man goes into a public recreational facility. It was a public swimming pool or whatnot, where children are at and women and children are at or anything else, goes into the women's locker room, dressed as a man, changes as a man, and goes out, and was seen there again. And when he was stopped by an employee, he said, "Well, this is the law now. I can be here." And he wasn't apprehended by any other employees. He wasn't apprehended or confronted by police or anything else. We don't really know what happened to this guy. You know, several people at the facility had talked about this to the news. And you know what the terribly stupid and sad part about this is that, yes, he was absolutely right. Under the law, that's exactly what he could do. And people say, oh, that won't happen. It just happened. People are going to keep doing that, with or without cross-dressing, especially with these laws as they stand. I mean, why would you even go if, you know, if there was someone who was just disturbed and looking for this sort of thing? I mean, why would you even go through the trouble at that point to do some sort of disguise or some other sort of masking thing or cross-dressing or anything like that? I mean, under this law, I mean, you're essentially making that person's plot easier. And that's just the really unfortunate part about this. I mean, that's exactly what we said was going to happen for these things, and that's exactly what people are doing. And you know what? I don't know what it will take really to get this into some of these folks' heads, especially as you mentioned the feminists, the supposedly pro women.
Right.
I don't know what it would take. If that doesn't, I have absolutely no indication of what would.
Yeah, I mean, it's another way that the feminists reveal their schizophrenia is whenever you have a husband or boyfriend murdering his wife or girlfriend who's pregnant. And you would think that the feminists would want the worst possible sentence to be given to this despicable human being who did that. But when the man is charged with double homicide if the woman is pregnant, oh, no, you can't do that. You can't charge him with double homicide because, of course, that fetus in the woman's belly wasn't really a human being. So we don't want to give him that severe of a charge. Just knock it down to homicide, not double homicide. And when you think about how insane right. that is,
yeah,
and how and self-refuting that is, it's insane. That's why we use that in the theme for our program today.
Right. I mean, additionally, so walk back the transgender idea. I mean, step outside and walk that back a little bit. I mean, the idea. I mean, this should be the concept that ticks off feminists around the world, because basically when you talk about the transgender thing, you basically say, yes, as a man, you know what it is to be a woman. I mean, you have to think about, by their standards or by anyone's standards, I mean, you have to think about how ridiculous and almost sexist that proposition is. Like, oh, I know exactly what it's like to be a woman. Well, how do you know you feel you're a woman inside? Oh, well, I just know. I mean, that idea should be incredibly insulting to any woman, you know, especially when you're talking about men who are just completely just physically different, biologically different. I mean, just on every single aspect who will not go through menopause or bear children. I mean, just think about that. I mean, to say, oh, I know what it's like to be a woman because I'm actually one inside. I mean, really, that concept in and of itself should really just be yeah. having the feminists in a absolute rage.
Yeah, just like I think, didn't Bruce Jenner recently say some comment about the most difficult thing about being a woman is picking out clothes and putting on makeup or something like that?
Right, Yeah.
Something absolutely insulting to women because he's not a woman.
Right. And
he never will be a woman.
Right. And additionally, you want to know why he has to put in so much effort is because he was an Olympic athlete. He is
a male Olympic athlete.
Big. Right. He is a big, very, he's a very tall, masculine man. So he has to put in all of the extra effort because he's trying to be precisely what he is not. So there's also that on top of that, yes.
And, of course, nobody even knows how to talk about history anymore. Who won those gold medals? Was it Bruce Jenner or Caitlin? You know, I mean, give me a break. Before we close the bathroom door on that subject, or have you exhausted that issue, or should we move on to homosexuality in schools and school curriculums?
No, this is good, absolutely, wherever you want to go.
Okay, yeah, let's talk about that, the situation with homosexuality and the stronghold they're getting in, the movement is getting in schools and in school curriculums in Massachusetts.
Right, so for Massachusetts, this has been a long-standing issue, unfortunately. You know, starting in the early 90s and really becoming very big in the mid-90s, late 90s, and through the 2000s. It's a sort of teachable moment for other people in other places, especially in other states where the school curriculums, the radical sexualized school curriculums aren't being pushed as hard, and in states that are more traditionally conservative. So you will start to see this sort of evolution. So really, where that evolution sort of started in Massachusetts was with the formation of the Gay and Lesbian Teachers Network, which was started by Kevin Jennings in the early 90s, and to focus with a laser focus in onto schools, school curriculums, student groups, and that was started in the early 90s. Now, really what precipitated a lot of change in schools and school curriculums was the passage of homosexual so-called marriage in 2004 in Massachusetts. And that was what really caused this issue to be open wide and spread out all over the place in Massachusetts school. And I like to make that point very strongly because obviously of the national homosexual marriage case from this June. So you will start to see the same evolution in other states. So what happened with the pushing of this curriculum is that as soon as gay marriage, homosexual so-called marriage passed here, there became a justification in terms of curriculum. So activist teachers, all of these other people who were being trained and prepped for years by the Gay and Lesbian Teachers Network, which is now known as the Gay and Lesbian Straight Education Network, or GLSEN as we call it for short, GLSEN. So they had been trained and primed for years for this moment. So when it came, they basically started to put homosexuality and transgenderism into every aspect of school curriculums because homosexual marriage was legal. That was their rationale. They say, oh, well, we want our curriculum to reflect society, even though it could really be considered wildly inaccurate, considering how homosexuals approach their own marriages. I mean, for one thing, that's just a completely different topic in and of itself. So that became the justification, saying, okay, well, we can teach these things in school now because this is law and there is nothing you can do about it. There was one teacher who was even quoted on NPR at the time saying, well, this is law now, there's nothing parents can do about it. So it's not just the sex ed aspect. That is one big aspect, and we are always constantly fighting that. But the aspect really is, through other means, the homosexualization of the curriculum. So, you know, children's books about men marrying men or about homosexual marriage, things of that nature, and putting it in an absolutely positive life light, trying to brainwash these kids, or how they would say, you know, tolerance and acceptance, so on and so forth. That really is what the push is, and you will see this in other states more and more and more, and that's something I always want to stress to people. In closer to your region, there's a case we've been dealing with recently in a private school in northeast of Philadelphia, where a woman called us last week, and she told us about her child being involved in this school program in a extracurricular, or a, well, it was actually not extracurricular, it was a curricular music program, who called to tell us about her and her son. Now, her son brought home a lyric sheet with this song that they had been rehearsing for several weeks, it seems, which was about cross-dressing. It was from a popular movie and musical called Billy Elliot, and it's this song about cross-dressing. They say, oh, well, what's wrong with this and that, and so on and so forth, and, you know, we want the world to be a tolerant place and all whatever other stuff that it has to say about that topic. And she was absolutely outraged and horrified over this. And what the homosexual and transgender activists keep saying is that we're not out for children, we're not out for children. No, we're not. There is no recruitment. I mean, this is exactly what it is when you're going after young people. I mean, this child, her son, was 9 years old. They are going after to manipulate young people to get them into these ideologies.
Of course they are.
And many of them will become involved in these activities and these lifestyles personally. She had spoken with me, this mother, and said, yeah, my son came home asking what mascara was, or this or that, and she was absolutely confused why he was asking, and it was something that was explicitly mentioned in the song, wearing mascara, and, you know, of course she had to tell her, well, you know, men don't wear that, and the child was like, oh, well, it says in the song people can and everything else, and that's really what it is. It is a brainwashing behind people's backs. And what's really telling about this is that none of the parents involved knew beforehand. So they had been doing this for, I guess, either a few days or a few weeks, and none of the parents of these children were informed about this by the school, or two, knew what was going on until a little bit later. And that's the other aspect of the homosexual curriculums and things, is that they put forth this idea that, well, this isn't sexuality education. We don't have to inform parents about this. And for people listening around the country, laws vary by state in terms of whether parents have to be told about sexual education curriculum, and I would encourage everyone to know what their state's policy on that is if you have children of this age, or even children who are maybe a little bit younger, because what a lot of these states have are integrated, you know, what they call, you know, integrated sexuality education, where they try and span it over the entire 12 years of schooling. So I on a separate note, I would encourage parents to look into that and to know where their state stands. But for the non-sexual aspects, this is where the activists go. They say, well, we're not obliged to tell you anything, because this isn't sexuality education. But what they are doing is pushing forth this very subjective, very normative issue and brainwashing children mm-hmm. with it. They're not saying, oh, well, homosexual marriage is a thing that exists and some people like it and some people don't. No, that's not even something they're saying. They're saying, because it exists, we not only have to tolerate it, but you have to like these. You have to like this yes. aspect, this emerging aspect of society. It's not even, I mean, what if they were even trying to teach it? I mean, it's not even taught in a remotely balanced way, because as soon as it became law in Massachusetts, and, in other states as well along the years, as soon as it became law, they said, well, this is what it is, so we just have to teach it like we believe it. And that's, they completely gloss over any dissension, any overarching cultural or moral issues surrounded with it, and just give children these sorts of platitudes. And not to be crass, but if you were to really go into it, I mean, anything related with the homosexual lifestyle is wildly different than normal folks. I mean, even their conception of marriage itself, for many of these folks involved with that, especially for the men, they maintain what, you know, is kind of casually called, you know, open marriages and things, where it's like, oh, well, even though we're married, we're still just going to keep doing what we're doing. And, you know, obviously that detail's not appropriate for kids, but, I mean, even for older children, I mean, if you really want to talk about the facts of these matters, I mean, there's nothing similar about it, but they gloss over all of this stuff in order to brainwash children on the sexuality aspect, on the gender aspect, this whole cross-dressing thing. And that's what you will see happen more and more. If parents aren't informed, or if they're not involved, or whatever is going on, you know, people's kids are literally coming home and saying, oh, well, you know, they said at school I can wear a dress, someone's son, or they said at school, so on and so forth. I mean, we dealt with plenty of children, unfortunately, up in this state where they were diverted to outside organizations for, you know, all of these homosexual things and everything else, and, you know, became active homosexuals. And it was a direct result of people yeah. facilitating that in the school. And it's terrible, and it happens really quite a lot. I mean, it's very widespread, and it's becoming more so.
Yeah, this is a myth that has been promoted, that homosexuals are striving for equal rights. They want superior rights. In fact, they already have them. Right. It is absolutely ridiculous. They are a part of the establishment. I mean, it is Christians and those with conservative biblical values that are the revolutionaries today. And, right. It's nonsense. And, to view them as some kind of a persecuted minority, I am sure that in the vast majority of workplaces in this nation, your job, your livelihood will be far more in jeopardy for saying anything negative about homosexuality than it would if you made a slur against Christianity. I mean, you see that even all the time in the media, where Christianity is open game for mockery, and even Jesus Christ is. And whereas the, you know, say something too offensive about homosexuality and your career could be just, you know, destroyed. I mean, and it's really like a frog in the kettle syndrome, where the activists, in cooperation with the media, are just numbing everyone to the idea of homosexuality, where it just is becoming as commonplace as green grass and blue skies and yellow suns. It's really disturbing, to say the least. And before we go on to the homosexual youth pride events, We're going to be going to a station break, our final station break. And if you'd like to join us on the air, I apologize for some of you who I've kept waiting, but our email address is chrisarnzen@gmail.com, chrisarnzen@gmail.com. If you'd like to join us on the air, now would be the time to do it because we've only got about a half hour left in the broadcast. So we look forward to hearing from you and your questions and our discussion as it continues with with Sean Ryan of MassResistance.org. That's MassResistance.org. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Attention coin collectors and investors. Long Island Galleries of Wading River, New York has brilliant, uncirculated 19th century Morgan silver dollars for only $54 per coin, with free shipping and handling for a limited time. There's a 40-coin limit, so order now while supplies last. Call 888-260-8111. 888-260-8111. Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express welcome. Prices subject to change, so call now at 888-260-8111. 888-260-8111. If you prefer ordering your brilliant, uncirculated 19th century Morgan silver dollars by check, mail it today to Long Island Galleries, 9 Susan Drive, Wading River, New York, 11792. That's Long Island Galleries, 9 Susan Drive, Wading River, New York, 11792. Remember, they're only $54 per coin with free shipping and handling and a 40-coin limit. New York State residents must add sales tax. Long Island Galleries is honored to sponsor Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. See the Long Island Galleries display ad at ironsharpensironradio.com.
Lynbrook Baptist Church on 225 Earl Avenue in Lynbrook, Long Island, is teaching God's timeless truths in the 21st century.
Our church is far more than a Sunday worship service.
It's a place of learning where the scriptures are studied and the preaching of the gospel is clear and relevant.
It's like a gym where one can exercise their faith through community involvement.
It's like a hospital for wounded souls where one can find compassionate people and healing.
We're a diverse family of all ages,
enthusiastically serving our Lord Jesus Christ
in fellowship, play, and together.
Hi, I'm Pastor Bob Waldeman, and I invite you to come and join us here at Lynbrook Baptist Church and see all that a church can be.
Call Lynbrook Baptist at 516-599-9402. That's 516-599-9402, or visit lynbrookbaptist.org. That's lynbrookbaptist.org.
I'm James White of Alpha and Omega Ministries. The New American Standard Bible is perfect for daily reading or in-depth study. Used by pastors, scholars, and everyday readers, the NASB is widely embraced and trusted as a literal and readable Bible translation. The NASB offers clarity and readability while maintaining high accuracy to the original languages, which the NASB is known for. The NASB is available in many editions like a topical reference Bible. Researched and prepared by biblical scholars devoted to accuracy, the new Topical Reference Bible includes contemporary topics relevant to today's issues. From compact to giant print Bibles, find an NASB that fits your needs very affordably at nasbible.com. Trust, discover, and enjoy the NASB for yourself today. Go to nasbible.com. That's nasbible.com.
Tired of box store Christianity? Of doing church in a warehouse with all the trappings of a rock concert? Do you long for a more traditional and reverent style of worship? And how about the preaching? Perhaps you've begun to think that in-depth biblical exposition has vanished from Long Island. Well, there's good news. Wading River Baptist Church exists to provide believers with a meaningful and reverent worship experience, featuring the systematic exposition of God's Word. And this loving congregation looks forward to meeting you. Call them at 631-929-3512 for service times. 631-929-3512. Or check out their website at wrbc.us. That's wrbc.us.
Welcome back. This is Chris Arnzen, and we want to thank our friends at Wading River Baptist Church again for making Iron Sharpens Iron possible. Through not only their prayer and encouragement, but through their financial support. And we thank them for being among the most dedicated and ongoing and determined and helpful supporters of Iron Sharpens Iron that we've ever had. And special thanks to Pastor Ron Glass over there at Wading River Baptist Church. And if you've just tuned us in for the last 90 minutes and for the following half hour or following 25 minutes or so, we're going to be continuing our discussion with Sean Ryan, who is the Director of Communications for MassResistance.org, MassResistance.org. And if you'd like to join us on the air with a question of your own, our email address is chrisarnson@gmail.com, chrisarnson@gmail.com. We do have CJ in Lindenhurst, Long Island, New York, who wants to know if Mitt Romney, when he was governor of Massachusetts, did anything to curtail the stronghold of the homosexual activist movement.
You know, the Romney legacy is very mixed in terms of that, but in general he was very passive about the whole issue. He kind of helped to start and continue a trend which is currently still going on with Governor Charles Baker, a Republican here, with regards to the homosexual issue. Now, whereas Romney was quite complicit in a lot of stuff, Governor Charles Baker right now is quite in favor and quite forceful of a number of these things. I mean, for instance, one thing trying to defund the Commission on Gay and Lesbian Youth during the Romney administration, which at that time we only got so far with that, but it was not supported by Romney, and we didn't get that to where it needed to be. We weren't able to defund the Commission because that ended up being something that blew up for him, and instead of staying on the side of real values, he caved in that regard. His legacy on this is very, very poor. We've published our report a while back while he was campaigning for president, the Romney deception, and it was a book just detailing a lot of his issues and tacit support for the homosexual events, the Commission on Gay and Lesbian Youth, and everything else. I think when he started to have national ambitions, he kind of sort of tried to shape up, but I don't think that was really authentic, and I think part of the reason why he lost that election was that he did not have the genuine support of the base, because I think people knew better, and especially as a result of what we were uncovering with him in Massachusetts at that time. I think people really knew better not to trust him on this issue. And you know what? It was a zero-sum game. I mean, it was a lose-lose for him, because he didn't support the truth. He didn't energize the base, and at the same time, the homosexual activists still hated him, even though he was quite complicit in a number of things. There was one story that got a lot of traction about him meeting with two lesbians and a sort of uncouth remark he had made, and they just dived all over him for that, even though his quiet institutional support in state government. You know, even after all that, they just attacked him for that, and that's, again, part of the tactic about politicized organized homosexuality, is that when I talked about things being in motion during the previous hours, about that things never stopping, never reaching a point, that's part of it with Romney, was that there was nothing he could do to ever please these people, and he should not have tried.
And we have Arnie in Perry County, Pennsylvania, who wants to know why you became so actively involved in this organization, Mass Resistance. What was it that drew you to a focus on this whole issue?
Oh, wow. That's a very good question, and a very personal question. And you know, I've never had the opportunity actually really to talk about that in any big venue. So thank you for your call for asking about that. To be honest, I'm actually a fairly young guy, especially for someone involved on this issue, so that also tends to surprise people. So what really got me involved, I remember when I was a young man, I mean, I was sort of kind of a fencer, so to speak, on the homosexual issue, especially when it came to marriage. I mean, it was just something that was sort of endemic to people in my age group, that sort of position being, you know, at least somewhat supportive about it, or at least not really particularly against it. I mean, you look at the polling nowadays for folks under 30, and, you know, that trend is very clear that there's, you know, overwhelming support, or at least passive support for it. But I was reading about the topic, or some topics related to homosexuality or whatever else. I forgot how I ended up reading this, some of the stuff on the internet, but I stumbled across Peter LaBarbera's site, who is the executive director of Americans for Truth about homosexuality in Illinois. And I stumbled across his site, and at that time, it was a very good national overview of things that were going on. And what really just got me on this site almost instantaneously, I had watched a video on his site, and it was from San Francisco. I believe it was from 2006, so it was a few years old when I had seen it. And it was this video of these just absolutely crazed, vicious folks, most of whom I would have to assume were probably homosexual or homosexual activists, who were chasing and throwing stuff at people on a street corner in San Francisco who were singing gospel songs. They weren't even protesting anything. There were no signs. It wasn't even like some sort of active protest. It was some type of mission sort of thing where these people were gathered on a street corner and singing these gospel songs, and they were like chasing these people and just screaming at them and throwing stuff at them, eggs or whatever, cups or bottles or anything else. And it was just mind-blowing at that time for me, because it completely contradicted the prevailing homosexual narrative that they are the victims. And watching these folks who were giving witness to their, or trying to give witness to their faith in the middle of San Francisco, and just seeing them literally attacked, I mean, these very gentle Christian folks being attacked, that was just revelating for me, and that absolutely blew my mind, because that is not something people talk about. And you know what? It still goes on, and you see some of these things happen surrounding these homosexual events where you have people quietly gathered to talk about homosexuality from a religious basis and give their literature or what have you. I mean, that stuff still happens, and it's not particularly even remarked upon. But this, as far as I know, wasn't even related to homosexuality. They were witnessing in a gospel sort of sense and being attacked, and that absolutely blew my mind, and I kind of sat up straight and said, well, I mean, you know, someone has to do something about this. And I sort of took up this issue because it's seen as a wedge issue, so to speak, not something that, you know, people are really supposed to care about from a policy standpoint, which I think is absolutely rubbish. And I wanted to focus in on that because it seemed like as much obvious opposition as there was to homosexuality, homosexual marriage, transgenderism, there weren't people specifically putting all of their effort into working on it and fighting it. But yeah, thank you. I want to thank your caller again for asking that. But yeah, that was a very good question, and I absolutely encourage people, you know, whatever they can do to just go out there and do it. For me, I've, you know, been working on this issue full time, and I've devoted a lot of energy to it, because it's just there's not enough people doing that. So
I wonder if you get accused by the homosexual activists, and when I say you, I mean you and those who labor with mass resistance. Most when I've seen homosexual activists in the media, and even just homosexual actors and comedians address those that have an opposition to that behavior, they it's interesting that the worst insult that they can throw at people like Christians and people with conservative and biblical moral values, the worst thing that they can throw at them that they can think of is, you must really be a homosexual. You're just hiding it, and you have a self-hatred, and you're a closeted, self-loathing homosexual. And it's interesting that the worst thing that homosexuals and their advocates can insult others with is by calling them homosexuals also. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. There's a number of people that's happened to for years. Actually, the gentleman I mentioned who headed up Americans for Truth, actually still is, Peter LaBarbera. I mean, if any of your listeners or if you or anyone else follows Peter LaBarbera's stuff, I mean, he gets absolutely hounded by people for just that, and it's been going on for years, and the man has a lovely family and five kids and everything else, and there's nothing he could do other than stopping his activism that would really, you know, prevent these people from saying that. And maybe not even that, you know, it's completely absurd. I mean, you know, people have said this before. I mean, you know, anyone, I mean, you could say that about anything. It's like, oh, if you hate Donald Trump, well, you're probably happy that you can slip in on the secret ballot and vote for him. You know, it's obscene. You think about anything. I'll leave it at that. But
it's interesting that they don't use that rhetoric where it belongs, like with the Nazis, who had many people in leadership that were homosexual, and you don't have the homosexuals using that rhetoric. Well, there really were, repressed homosexuals themselves. Well, why?
Oh, yeah.
Why don't they say that about the Nazis? You know?
Oh, because yeah,
it's
absolutely
true.
I've seen there's a whole bunch of. I mean, if anyone curious to look into it, I mean, there's a whole bunch of archival things available. I mean, I remember looking at political cartoons, and Ernst Röhm is kind of just this standing joke. I mean, that's absolutely. I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right about that. One of the other things people always say is that, oh, well, you're a hater or this or that, which, again, having a policy and having a philosophical disagreement does not constitute hate. I mean, I don't know how these people learn to be an adult, but I hope not from their parents. I don't know, but because you can obviously have a policy disagreement, you can have a major philosophical disagreement and not hate people. The one thing I always say, you know, when people sling around the hateful thing, it's like, you know, we don't hate homosexuals, or I don't hate homosexuals. But we hate what homosexuality does to people, and you look at the staggering emotional costs, you look at the cost in lives and healthcare financing and everything else for AIDS and all these other STDs, which, yes, if it can't be repeated enough, disproportionately affect homosexuals. We don't hate homosexuals. We hate what homosexuality does to people, and there's just so many awful things about being involved with that life, and that's really, if there's anything, it's not the people themselves. I mean, look, you know, people are vulnerable to whatever issues they are in life, and they're especially more vulnerable if you're going after them as kids, you know. But it's, you know, you can't, you know, there's no hatred in a personal sense. I mean, we want people to get better. We want society to get better, become healthier, and really start to stabilize, to value marriage, to value sexuality in an authentic sense.
Yeah, and of course, there is never, or rarely, I should say, in admitting that they hate Christians.
Yeah.
You know, why is it that we are the only ones who hate because we oppose what they do?
Yeah.
If they oppose what we believe, why don't they hate us? Why isn't that equivalent to hatred? But I want to make sure that we have time to address the gay youth pride days and things like that in the school that before we leave.
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely. So these sort of events, they're typically, I mean, there are events in schools going along with stuff we were talking about earlier, but one of the big things that they do every year in Massachusetts is kind of famous, Eastern Massachusetts is kind of famous for the involvement in the implementation of this, is a homosexual youth pride day in Boston every May. And I've attended a number of these, you know, getting, just seeing what they're doing with kids and what they're giving out to kids, because they are public events. And that is one of their big things for the schools here, is taking these kids who are involved with these groups, a lot of them, you know, unknowingly with the parents, and busing them out to these very adult events. So you go to these. It's basically an outdoor festival outside of City Hall, to describe it for your listeners. It's this outdoor festival outside of Boston City Hall, you know, with music, things, and everything else. It's, you know, an outdoor festival, and they have all of these tables and of groups providing, you know, materials or services or anything else, and it's a lot of condoms and STD testing and all of these things that they're pushing at these kids. You know, get anonymously tested, you know, your parents will find out. There was a sign we had photographed that was, you know, free and confidential STD testing for ages 29 to 12. I mean, that's, you think about it, that's absolutely insane. And as I learned doing some research this week for another legislative thing, there's with medical services and things in Massachusetts, I mean, even if you're a minor, depending on what it is, you can consent to some of these things. And that's something that they've been, you know, working in the law for years, just to have these things available to corrupt kids externally without parents' knowledge. So they go and they have these obscene performances. They provide all of these terrible materials and things to kids, essentially, you know, how it's, you know, a primer, if anything, you know, and how to go around your parents' back and how to do this and all these other sorts of things, how to get, you know, confidential and free STD testing. You know, here's a pile of condoms, and we hope you don't get HIV. But if you do, we have more services that you can get for free now. But when you're dealing with this lifetime disease or ailment, then you get to pay us for it, which is even better for them. You know, it's just, it's sort of like going into this bizarre world. And, you know, they have, you know, like this homosexual prom, which is just incredibly obscene. I mean, you think about, you know, people joke about how bad normal kids are, but you go to one of these things, and I have, and you see all sorts of outrageous things. I mean, not even, I don't mean to get too personal or too crass about this or upset anyone, but, you know, you talk about, because we are talking about kids here, but you talk about the sexual promiscuity in the adult community, right? But, I mean, you look at it, it starts young. So you go into these events, and I've been to a few of them, the homosexual youth prom, and, you know, it's like a dance party or whatever else, but it's just very, very obscene behavior, and I haven't really seen this sort of level for at school children anywhere ever. And, you know, just people just being very lascivious or making out and this and that and all that. But it's not even like they stick with one person. I mean, they go from person to person if you just sort of keep an awareness. And like I said, I apologize. I don't mean to be very obscene when we're talking about children or anything. But, I mean, that's sort of, you think about the sexual promiscuity in the adult community. I mean, it starts young, the lack of valuing an actual relationship. And I saw kids going in there where it's, you know, they come in as a couple, and then they go around to, they break off and go to whatever other people, and then they leave as a couple. I mean, you think about it, it's just, it sets these poor kids up for that, that mindset, and it's just all of these bizarre, things.
What can you tell us about the intrusive surveys that children are being given?
Oh, so one of the ways that these state and national groups gin up funding, government funding, for these things is through school surveys. Now, there's one or two major national ones known as the Youth Risk Behavior Survey. That's really the main one. And it's these very personal surveys, you know, asking kids about drug use and sexuality and this and that. And a lot of these go down into the middle school range, and they can be just incredibly obscene in terms of the questions it gets. I will tell you this. I mean, we have had people talk about this on the radio before, but I'm not going to push the limits on that. But there have been conservative folks who have talked about it on the radio in Massachusetts, but it gets just very graphic and very specific and obscene about what sort of practices they do, how often they do it. And it's, you know, for kids who are unfamiliar with any, a lot of this stuff, obviously, you know, because a lot of these surveys go to middle school kids.
So in other words, they're planting ideas in kids' heads. But,
right. That's absolutely one of the things. And they also ask about very personal family matters and this and that. And there's no notification system for these sorts of things, because these happen without parents' knowledge. I actually remember taking a version of this sort of thing in a Catholic school. You know, there was no notification, but they also use these surveys, which are conducted behind parents' back, to also then gin up their funding.
Because they say, look,
oh, we have all these problems. And I mean, they've done studies on this for older high schoolers who actually tend to you know, lie on these surveys, because it's just, some of these things are so over the top, so you have, you know, these young kids just sort of snickering about some of the questions they're answering and just being blithely wrong about them. They've done follow-up studies on other surveys, not the Youth Risk. I'm not sure what the status on that is. And that's how they get their funding, to push in even more sexualized curriculum and everything else. So it's this massive feedback loop in that regard.
Mm-hmm. We do have an anonymous listener who said that, I did hear your program, meaning an Iron Sharpens Iron program, where you interviewed Andrew Beckwith of the Massachusetts Family Institute, talking about the horrific problems that Christians and others who oppose homosexuality are having, the difficult time they are having adopting children. Any comments on that from your guest today? And we only have about 2 minutes for you to do that.
Okay. You said Christian families and things having issues adopting.
Yeah, we interviewed Andrew Beckwith, president of Massachusetts Family Institute. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that organization.
Oh yes. No, I've ran into him on a number of occasions. Yes, absolutely. I know Andrew. That is certainly one thing. I mean, I think one big thing is the ability to do so as well. So, for instance, parents who would complete this process through, let's say, like the Catholic Adoption Agency up here, which had to you know, close its adoption services because homosexuals said, you know, well, you have to let homosexual couples adopt children. I mean, that's one issue as well. I mean, people who would be going specifically to Catholic agencies to adopt children, now they don't even have that resource on their side up here. Now they are really only forced to go through more state-based agencies. So that's absolutely, for one thing, or any religious organization that would do that up here would face the same threat, and I'm sure that's going to continue in other states. So organizations that would be less hostile to Christians are now not able to even really function, because now the state's going to shut down their valuable service on, you know, trying to, by forcing them to violate their beliefs in adoption placing.
Let me just give a little plug to the Massachusetts Family Institute. Their website is mafamily.org, MA for massachusettsfamily.org. And I know that your website, Sean Ryan, is massresistance.org, massresistance.org. It's been an honor and privilege to have you on the program today. You've been a veritable fountain of information, and I'm not exaggerating when I say that. I look forward to having you back.
Thank you, Chris. I definitely appreciate it, and I encourage anyone, no matter wherever they are, I know there's things that are specifically Massachusetts related, but it's a great issue for people anywhere, wherever you're at, to Amen. Really understand this.
That's right. And I want to thank you, Buzz Taylor, the Reverend Buzz Taylor, for being my co-host today.
Thank you.
I want to thank everybody who listened, especially those who wrote in questions. In fact, everybody who wrote in a question today is getting a free New American Standard Bible, compliments of the publishers who are celebrating their 73rd anniversary in publishing. Every one of you is getting a bonded leather New American Standard Bible very soon, God willing. And I hope that you all always remember for the rest of your lives that Jesus Christ is a far greater Savior than you are a sinner. God bless.